Well, good morning. It is great to see you. Isn't it lovely to be meeting back in the same place again? It's wonderful. I even nearly put a tie on, but I thought you probably couldn't handle that. If you find yourself in conversation with a friend or a colleague tomorrow, and they ask you what you did over the weekend, I wonder if your answer would be along the lines of, well, on Sunday morning, I was studying advice from the Middle East from well over 2,000 years ago on how to live a good life. You can anticipate the conversation. You did what? How on earth can that help us? These people lived in such different circumstances. What did they know of scientific advances, of social media, of modern weaponry, of geopolitics? Well, one answer is that although the context has changed, human nature has not. The same broad issues of how we behave crop up whatever the culture. Another answer is that the book of Proverbs that we're studying is part of a long story about God's interaction with the human race. This is a story well worth studying. And in that story, the life, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus is its crux, literally, in terms of the meaning of that Latin word for a cross. So we have the benefit of seeing Proverbs through the lens of that central event and that bigger story. So if we take a standard approach to try to understand what the Bible is saying to us, we might usually begin by asking, what was the message in its context? Are there principles we can pull out to help us? And if there are, how do they help us with our own situation? Okay, so what's the context? Proverbs, I think, is training material for young men, as it would be in that culture. Generations ago in Scotland, there used to be a catechism, something that was repeated by schoolchildren in schools, to drill good Christian principles into the minds of young people. And we could imagine that similar kind of scenario with this long-term drip, drip, drip of repetition to bury good principles deep in the soul. What are the principles that Proverbs teaches? Well, that's summed up in the statement we heard in the video. It appears more than once in Proverbs. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The word fear is rather old-fashioned language, which we might reasonably translate as a recognition of the majesty and holiness of God. Now, here's another statement taken from chapter 8, where wisdom herself speaks, and I'm going to shorten this section to just a few verses, a few sentences. The Lord brought me forth as the first of his works before his deeds of old. I was formed long ages ago, at the very beginning when the world came to be. I was there when he set the heavens in place and when he marked out the foundations of the earth. Then I was constantly at his side. I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in his presence, rejoicing in his whole world and delighting in mankind. That's wisdom. As Doogie Robertson reminded us 2 weeks ago, wisdom is not cleverness, it's not talent, it's not something that comes with age. Wisdom is an expression of the character of God, and we look to him to find it. As it says in Proverbs 3, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him, and he will make your paths straight. So, there's a very good starting point. But what more detailed guidance does Proverbs give us? A lot is said about the dangers of folly, the opposite of wisdom, I suppose. Adultery is singled out as a particular danger. Honesty and other moral characteristics are encouraged. And last week, Donald very helpfully led us through issues of human relationships, focusing particularly on marriage as an example. That was really good. I hope you'll notice, by the way, the huge contribution made by the string section of the West Glasgow New Church band. I think that's very significant. This week, we're asked to think about wealth and lifestyle. So from chapter 10 onwards, as the video explained, we have a large collection of proverbs, short, pithy statements for guidance. So let's listen to a few of them on the topic of wealth. Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops, then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine. Rich and poor have this in common: the Lord is the maker of them all. Whoever oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honors God. The rich are wise in their own eyes. One who is poor and discerning sees how deluded they are. Do not wear yourself out to get rich. Do not trust your own cleverness. Cast but a glance at riches and they are gone, for they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. So, what's the message? It's not that wealth is intrinsically bad. Our barns filled to overflowing is a very good thing. But that making wealth our ruthless aim causes serious damage. Now, the New Testament confirms and amplifies the advice. The Gospels have a lot to say about rich and poor. You remember the story of the widow who was so poor she only had tuppence to put in the church collection. Generosity is measured not by what's given, but by what remains. Remember the story of the rich young ruler whose well-meaning commitment to God was seriously hampered by his attachment to his wealth and lifestyle. Or the parable where Jesus said it was harder for a camel to go through the eye of the needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Now, again, none of that says that wealth is somehow bad. Jesus rebuked those who criticized the woman who used a very expensive box of ointment to honor him. The point is, making the pursuit of wealth too much of a priority can create barriers for more important things. From our perspective in 2022, we've heard these things quite often, and the effect of them is a bit blunted. This is actually a shocking idea, particularly to those who heard it for the first time, that wealth can be a problem. So, shouldn't become slaves to wealth. If we have it, we should do something good with it. So let me ask you, do you think of yourself as wealthy? When you hear the Proverbs, you identify with the rich man or the poor man. Wherever we lie in the scale, we tend to look upwards, don't we, to those who are more wealthy, particularly to the spectacularly wealthy, and so we see ourselves as poor in comparison to them. But if we take a more global view, the UK is way up there in terms of the list of rich countries, however you measure it. We are part of a very wealthy country. So for many of us, issues of wealth and lifestyle do apply. It's quite interesting that Proverbs is full of statements like, whoever oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honors God. That's the standard form. One thing, but the other. And there are contrasts and comparisons going on all the time. Proverbs has hundreds of them. I suppose the idea is to make us aware that there are choices to make here, different directions we can go in. Even if those choices are unconscious, as they often are, there are choices nonetheless. So what influences those choices? You may say it's a personal decision, and that's undoubtedly true to some extent, but we often make choices by default without thinking too much about it, at least I do, because our lifestyle is hugely influenced by those around us. So in our situation, how do we find specific wisdom in this? Early in the life of the church, this church, one of our leaders, David Harvey, introduced a helpful visual aid which drew attention to three dimensions of Christian life. I'd like to use it in a variation form. Where do we look for wisdom? Look up, look in, and look around. Let me say it again. Look up, look in, and look around. What do I mean? Look up. Look up to God. If God is the source of wisdom, as Proverbs tells us, that's where we need to keep looking. So the relationship we have with God needs to be healthy, individually and corporately. If we lose sight of that influence, we lose the plot. Look in. Look in to our fellow Christians. The Christian community we share together is there for a purpose. It's intended to be a hugely positive and helpful influence on us. That sense of community and trust that we all enjoy needs to be nurtured. If we lose sight of that, we are left as struggling individuals. The vast majority of us are called to the Christian life together for a reason. Look around. We're part of the world about us, and it influences us hugely. For good and for bad. We tend to focus on the bad aspects, and you can probably think of lots of those. But actually, there are good things at work in the world too. God is at work in the world around us. Can we spot where and join in? We're called to be a witness to the world, not to retreat from it. Look up, look in, and look around. Maybe you feel that's a little simplistic. I find it quite a helpful kind of summary, and you may feel it leaves us in a somewhat bewildered state, looking in every direction. But can we finish with something specific? We've been asked to think about wealth and lifestyle. So what is the biggest wealth and lifestyle issue that we face? You might make a case for various things, and the personal issues that Proverbs talks about won't go away. But I think you might agree that the huge issue for our lifestyle is now climate change. Now, who am I to talk, you may say? I may well have the most embarrassing air miles record of anyone in the church. I might plead that's partly work-driven, but it remains true, and I hold up my hand. But however we got here, we have collectively a lifestyle problem, and it's a huge one. Its potential consequences are enormous, but the major consequences are long-term. It's our young people who will have to deal with them, and it's an issue of justice. The consequences fall most severely on developing countries who have had least to do with creating the problem. So what's our response? It's so easy to be completely daunted by the scale of the task and the obstacles in the way. What difference do our piffling little contributions make anyway? Well, what does it mean to seek wisdom for this? Can we take encouragement from our three principles? Let's look at them in reverse order. Look around. In broad terms, we know what we need to do. Reduce our dependency and carbon fuels, live sustainably. In principle, we can do this. And lots of people and agencies are working towards that. It needs huge changes. And yes, there are obstacles, but let's join in. If there's a growing recognition that the world needs change, the church should be right in there. Look in. This is a team game. We can help one another, thanks to those who are already taking quiet lead in all of that. But don't forget to look up. In any area of life, it's easy to be intimidated by apparently insuperable problems. Many of those who saw the actions of a humble Jewish carpenter, as it seemed, would have given him no chance against the might of the ruling powers. And look how wonderfully that turned out. Whatever happens, and whatever how much of a mess we make of things along the way, trust in God is where wisdom ultimately comes from. Well, it's time to finish. Thank you for listening.